Blog Talk Radio.
Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Hello and welcome to the Reasonable Voices Blog Talk Radio, where political talk is honest and art is politically poignant. Today we're discussing the transformation of the neglected and deserted Jefferson School in Vinegar Hill into a truly amazing city center. We have three guests today, and hopefully who do we have on the line? Mike Silverman, is that you or is it you, Andrea?
Yes, I'm here. Yep.
Mike?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Everyone, this is Mike Silverman. He's a University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill grad who works in media production with the Charlottesville Public Access Television and for 3 years edited hundreds of shows for Virginia Living Television. His Silver Street production company works with a number of clients throughout Virginia, and he worked with me in producing, shooting and producing and editing, post-production, all of it, for The Last Remnant, which was a video on the Jefferson School, which has now been transferred. We shot this 2 years ago and in 2011, and since it's become a Giga Alert, and we were made aware of it again, and I went by Jefferson School and saw just how much had happened since we shot there. So, Mike, first of all, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
It's great. It's great to hear your voice. It's been a while. So let's talk, let's tell people what it was like that cold day, I believe in January 2011 when we shot this in Charlottesville. Do you remember that day?
Yeah, I think it was about 30 degrees and we were all bundled up inside of the school. You know, there wasn't a whole lot going on in the school because they were just starting the renovations. It was neat to go in there and just see sort of the transition period that it was going through. And, fortunately had electricity so we could plug in the lights and we had some great guests and they're very patient with us as we got everything set up. So it was a very cool shoot to be a part of.
Not exactly hazardous conditions, but it certainly was cold. We're handling equipment and cameras, yes?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Well, let's describe it a bit. First of all, in Charlottesville, Virginia, there is a neighborhood called Vinegar Hill. It's been around for quite a while, and it was leveled pretty much at one point in Charlottesville's history. It is traditionally a black area that is most black businesses as well as residents, and the Jefferson School was the black school. We met Andrea Douglas, Dr. Andrea Douglas, who's going to be a guest pretty soon, and Mike and I did a video to show where the school was at that point. It had been pretty neglected. It was concrete, cold, basically a school that had been sort of just left there. That's what, if you see our video, that's what you will see. But now, 2 years later, it is an amazing new city center. But let's get back to the video specifically for a bit. Mike, what kind of crew did you need? How many were involved to shoot this?
We had one director, Lonnie Young, was there, and then I had another assistant, Kevin McRoberts, and he was helping out, and myself. And so basically we came in and, set up all the lights, all the cameras, all the audio equipment, and then we had the city manager, Maurice Jones, was there, and a couple other people.
Yeah.
And, basically just got them to just get on camera and talk about their hopes and dreams for the center, and that was really neat. But, you know, it was a small production, but I think, you know, we got a lot of really good content. And we're fortunate to have some of the former, some people who had previously gone to the school on set, and we're able to actually interview them directly, even though it was, you know, 30 degrees and they were, you know, freezing. But it all worked out.
Yes, it's true. These sweet little old ladies who had attended the school, I believe, was it the 1920s, 1930s? But there they were all bundled up, and they had actually attended Jefferson School. The old elementary school, I believe, is no longer in existence, but this was the high school. And during that period of time, if I remember correctly, black students were not allowed to get an education in this, in the Charlottesville area, beyond the eighth grade. They had to be sent away up north to complete their education. And the Jefferson School was the highest of where they could go in the area. So we sat in various areas of the school itself, but the auditorium was pretty much the original proscenium stage frame. Can't remember much about the floors. Were they wooden? Yes, they were wooden. They were wooden. And the original seats, and that's where we shot a lot of it. What about the sound, Mike, and the camera angles? I don't want to sound too elementary, but, you know, break it down for us a bit.
Well, I mean, you know, for the most part, the audio turned out pretty good. I mean, it wasn't the ideal environment. You know, it was a building from, you know, decades ago, and, you know, the acoustics weren't great, but I think in the auditorium they were pretty good. So when we initially shot in one of the classrooms, there was a good bit of echo, but, you know, it worked out. Yeah. People understood that we were shooting in an old building that was being renovated. And then when you sit down with Andrea in the auditorium, I think that was kind of the meat of the segment when she was, you know, talking about the vision for the center. And, I mean, I think technically, it turned out pretty well, and it was a fun video to work on.
Yeah, how about, talk to people about post-production. I know you and I worked quite extensively on that, quite a few hours, but I know we're pulling at both our memories trying to remember everything, because it has been a while, and we've done a lot since then, but do you remember working in the studio and putting that all together? Tell people, not everybody knows about post-production, so tell us about it, using the video as an example, but let us know how that works.
This was an interesting project, because we basically had about half a day to get in, shoot all the footage, and then, you know, head back and edit it all, and we didn't really have the opportunity to go back and shoot anything else if we needed to. We had to get it all that morning. So, you know, I wouldn't say that we were rushed, but, you know, we didn't have a ton of time. So in post-production, you know, we certainly could have gone back and gotten some more B-roll shots or, you know, cutaway shots of the auditorium, but we're kind of limited. So we had to improvise, and I remember we used some still photos that you had taken. And, you know, we just kind of did the best we could in the situation because, you know, it was a project where we were limited on where we could get footage from, and we weren't able to just go back in any time we wanted. And I think at the time, I don't think anyone was allowed in unless, you know, they had basically someone with a key. You know, it was locked up, and they might have had some instruction workers.
Yes, it was a very special situation. As you said, it was not by accident we had the city manager in the video. He wanted access to something in Charlottesville. You can't do much better than that. Maurice Jones had a great vision for the project as well. He is the city manager and still is the city manager of Charlottesville, Virginia. And in addition, there was a couple, and I feel terrible, I can't remember their names, but they are still the owners, I believe, of the longest minority-owned funeral home in Charlottesville, Virginia. And I went to visit that. Yes, Debbie. And her husband, whose name escapes with that rich, deep voice of his. But they were in the video. And there's a poignant scene, I urge everyone to see it, where she describes what it was like and what happened to Vinegar Hill. And It's just come such a long way from when we shot the video, but of course it has come a long way from its original history and how long it's been here. And recently, I attended, I guess maybe a year ago, not so recently, the groundbreaking. You may recall when we shot this, there was construction equipment all around the exterior, and not many places. I don't think there were functional bathrooms. Recall, nothing. But what they've done since, if you haven't seen it, Mike, and I urge everyone who can to go see it, they have married so well the past with the future and present in what they preserved in the way of the woodwork. And you remember those seats, those wooden seats in the auditorium. Well, they now line the hallways, so they still exist. Okay. And it, should one want to sit, in the hallway for whatever reason, but they are still there. So they've really kept the essence of the place while making it a pretty much a state-of-the-art a center for the city. So I guess, one more thing, Mike, I definitely want to talk to you about, which I always thought was an impressive shot, and that was the very end of the video. What, I don't remember whose idea that was, but I think you enhanced it in post, even if it was my idea. But it's
you
such
mean
a great
coming out
shot.
Of that doorway?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
What did we do?
Well,
did we do that in post?
Well, we basically just kind of pulled out of that doorway, and I think we had zoomed in all the way so that as we pulled out, zoomed out, it gave the illusion that we were going through multiple rooms. And, it was kind of being an old building. I mean, it was a little bit, kind of eerie, but also had this kind of a sense of history to it. And so, that was a pretty cool shot to get. And, just being in the building all together was just, kind of a new experience, I think, for a lot of us.
Yes. Now, your Silver Streak production company.
Yes.
I know you work with a lot of people in Virginia. Tell us a little about, before we have to go, what projects are you working on now?
Right now I've just shot some footage for an apartment complex in Gainesville, Virginia, and I'm just kind of going through some of that footage. I've been filming weddings all summer. I'm working on a project for Monticello for the Thomas Jefferson Foundation, promoting their new website and a conference they offer. So a lot of stuff going on. It's been really exciting this summer. I've been staying quite busy.
Fantastic. And are you still in the new office space where I saw you about a year or so ago?
Yeah. We're right here on Woodbrook Court, right up near Lowe's and Kroger.
In Charlottesville, right off 29.
In Charlottesville, yeah.
Yeah, excellent. Well, I hope people will listen to this, and I hope they'll look for you, and I hope they'll watch the video, because they'll certainly see an example of your work. And I should also mention, we did a bit of a series, Mike and I, called The Last Remnant, which the major feature was about the Jefferson School, but we also shot other historical areas in Charlottesville, including the old jail, which was called Number 5, because I think it was the fifth jail built, and it was the last time, and at that jail, the last person hanged, or at least white person hanged, I think it was explained to me by the Historical Society president, was at that jail. So that's another video you can check out. But we're going to have to run now. Mike Silverman, thank you so very much for being on the Reasonable Voices Blog Talk Radio and going down memory lane for me with that great video we did. And thank all of you who made it a giga alert. And now we're going to go to commercial, say goodbye to Mike, but we'll be right back with our other two guests. Mike, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, bye now.
Peace in so many words. I'm bringing peace that's going to last longer than it takes you to read the novel War and Peace, or Peace Like a River, or like the shore of a beach, or like Life is Calling and How Far Will You Go and Join the Core Peace, or Green Peace. I'm bringing peace to those who wear hoodies by Peace Frogs, or those who wear hoodies in the hood and say Peace Dog on mean streets. That means I'm bringing peace from the subway to suburbia. I'm bringing peace like when your neighbors got to call the police, peace officer, because you're disturbing the, all because they couldn't get a peaceful night's sleep on their Serta. You know, they was just trying to have a little peace and quiet. That means I'm bringing peace like the opposite of a riot. So now you got a citation and got to appear before a justice of the peace. I'm bringing peace because some people got no justice and no peace. And to the same who claim they was disturbed in their suburbia pool, need to know the real definition of disturbing the peace is urban renewal, picking up the pieces to your old church or your school, trying to piecemeal. They was just trying to get a piece of the meal, you know, working that mule because they never got their 40-acre piece of land, piece of pie, American dream, American pie, finally moving on up to the east side. So I'm bringing peace like Nobel Peace Prize.
Well, welcome back to the Reasonable Voices Law Talk Radio. We're discussing the transformation of the neglected and deserted Jefferson School in Vinegar Hill, which has now been turned into a truly amazing city center. And if we're lucky, on the line, we have Dr. Andrea Douglas. Andrea, are you there?
I am. How are you, Marcello?
I'm great. It's great to hear your voice. I'm so happy. Oh, yes, I hear you just fine. We were just talking to Mike Silverman, who was the camera man and did post-production on the video we did, The Last Remnant. But I just want to tell people, or have you share with us, when the video became a Giga Alert and I sent it around and told people, look what happened, because it's been 2 years, you reminded me that I had not seen the Jefferson School since we shot the video, and I stopped by to see it, and that's why we're on the show today. It's an amazing renovation that respects the past while becoming state of the art. So that's all I'm going to say about it. Let's have you talk, everyone. Dr. Andrea Douglas is the director of the Jefferson School African American Heritage Center, the executive director, and she has quite a history with art. She was the curator of collections and exhibitions and the curator of contemporary art at the University of Virginia Art Museum. Well, you just take it from there. Tell us, because until recently, it wasn't the last time I saw Andrea, but the first time we really worked together was on this video, sitting on the stage of the auditorium in our overcoats in about 30-degree weather, and she has certainly been, I mean, no one does everything alone by any means, but she certainly has been the spearhead of this amazing restoration of a piece of history that was pretty much, what's a good word for it, shoved aside, ignored. You tell us, Andrea. Take it from there.
Well, Marcello, it's really interesting because I was so surprised in seeing that video and realizing that we have come such a long way in what is such a short amount of time. Just after we, you know, when you talk about being at the groundbreaking, from the moment of groundbreaking, it took 14 months to complete the renovation. And it's both a restoration and a renovation. Because the building is on the National Historic Registry, there are very specific stipulations on how a building like this can be renovated. The idea that you cannot do anything to change the facade, for instance, of the school. It has to, even in those areas where you do make changes, it has to give some indication of what its original purpose was. And so when you talk about a masterful meeting of old and new, I think for those people who are interested in these kinds of things, walking through this building is quite a good example of how one can do this and do it seamlessly. The architects were Bushman Dreyfus, and I often take my hat off to them because even in the areas where there are perforations in the walls, in the areas that where that is allowed, you still get a very strong sense of what this building was. And since it opened, to have the alumni here walking through with us and the way in which they're able to so readily recall their time in that school has everything to do with that fact, because it looks the way it did. And they can say, oh, this was Mrs. Gamble's classroom, and I went from Ms. Gamble's classroom down to Miss Witsit's classroom, and it used to be right here, and the shop was here in 1 year, but then it moved down the hall to another. And we've actually spent this summer doing some mapping of the classes so that we can assign the teachers to each room. And it's been that kind of sort of reminiscence that's been so amazing. And looking at the video and thinking where exactly, you know, with the cold air blowing out of our mouths, I'm sitting there in my black parka, you in your coat with the scarf on, everyone with gloves. It's just not that. The auditorium has been now transformed into a state-of-the-art surround sound theater. We are as juiced in terms of technology as any university campus can be here, and completely wireless throughout the building. So the idea that we're trying to meet the intellectual capacity of all of the residents of Charlottesville is exemplified in the way even the technological program has been developed, but without sacrificing one bit of the understanding of the history of this school. The idea that it is, in fact, an African-American school located on this particular site from 1926 and still exists here, with a history that dates back even further than that to 1865, just months after emancipation. So,
It just has an amazing story, and thank you for filling in the blanks that I left. It is an amazing history, and you and the entire team, and just listening to you say that the original students, some of whom we met during the video, are still able to walk through and recognize the past while appreciating the work that has been done by the architects. How must you feel, for heaven's sake? I know, as you say, it's one thing when you're there every day, as I know you have been. You may be not aware until suddenly you see a video that shows you where you started, and then all of a sudden it kind of hits you in a flash. And I know that's a part of the experience you and I had when we saw the video again. But how do you feel now when you look? I mean, you've got a number of organizations in there, yes? I mean, even the is it the Culinary School of PBCC that has a cafeteria in there? Tell us about some of the places or the organizations that are in the building.
There are nine tenants in the building. The two anchor tenants are Carver Rec and the African American Heritage Center. But then there is Literacy Volunteers for America, Martha Jefferson Hospital, their Star Hill Center is here, the Women's Initiative, Common Ground, Healing Arts. PVCC has their general studies classes, and then they will open a culinary arts center. JABA has both their Mary Williams Center and a cafe here, the Vinegar Hill Cafe. And the majority of us are, or actually all of us, there's a tenants association here, and we meet once a month. And the ultimate goal for this place is really to talk about placemaking. How can you create a civic center that meets all of the needs of its community? And how can that then serve as an anchor for the community? Because we are located in an area that is undergoing some transition. And between the exhibition that the permanent installation that the Jefferson School has, coupled with the new kinds of programming, coupled with the relationships and the collaborations that we have, it really does represent a kind of bridge from the past to the future. And you can really walk in this building at 7 o'clock in the morning, and if you don't want to, not leave till 11 o'clock at night, because you have been able to go to the gym, take a class, get a massage, get your blood pressure checked, do some tutoring, have lunch, sit outside when the weather is good, go to an exhibition, whether it be a contemporary art exhibition or in the future it be our permanent historic exhibition, go to a lecture, have some dinner, all with free parking. What more do you want from a place? There's no place like that in this entire town where you can do all of that. And so the idea that you can take what was once a building that has suffered under, you know, that it has been here from 1926 to the present, then repurpose it, resurface it, and then really bring it back to the tradition, because the Jefferson School had always been the center of a community. And as the city center, it's now the center of a community and has the ability to really influence the way this community thinks about itself and the way in which this community interacts with itself. We define ourselves as a crossroads, both metaphorically and physically. We sit really in the center between the university and the downtown mall. And metaphorically, over the course of one day, more of the various kinds of people who live in Charlottesville enter this building than they do in any other building here in this town, I would argue. So as a description, and then do it easily. You know, Charlottesville has a parking problem. We don't. You know, we're on a bus line. We're within walking distance. So the notion of access, the idea of innovation, the idea of collaboration, all of those things live in this one space, this 3 acres of property. And then within a hard space, I mean, I encourage anyone to come over and take a look. You know, you've got all this green grass that you can just lay a blanket out if you want to.
I know.
Programmable.
The other day, as a matter of fact, one of the things when I drove by after you and I again saw the video and just said I need to come see what had changed, I noticed right away there was grass and this parking lot. And, you know, I mean, that's before I even got into the building. And yet, as you say, is required, the building itself, its outer facade is still there, sturdy red brick, standing tall, and certainly living through, living through a lot of history. But it is, in every sense of the word, a city center. I mean, you put it so well. It's just, it is a city center. It is a connection with the past, and yet it's preparing people for the future. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you know, when we've been working on our permanent installation for a little bit of time, and the permanent installation certainly tells the history of the Jefferson School from 1865. To the present, and I mean, I say the present. We'll deal with the renovation pieces of it, but once while we've been working on it for a while, over the course of the last year or so, so much new information has come to the forefront. So once we are at the point where we begin to install, we're not only just telling the Jefferson School history, but we're going to tell the history of the development of the urban Charlottesville, which by the very nature of it also includes the development of Albemarle County. And so when we first began the project with this idea that we were going to tell this history, where we are right now is with a clearer understanding that we need to take a little bit of a step back so that we can get a broader picture. But ultimately, when we're done with all of this, what you'll find here, in keeping with the point I'm trying to make, is the history of Charlottesville in a way that allows us to move from a colonial history such as that is taught at Monticello or Ashland to a much more contemporary, modern history of this city and the way in which this city has grown, and allowing us to really understand how the county and the city itself comes together through this place. So our ambitions, in that video we were talking about ambition. What were our plans?
Yeah.
What were we going to do? And we have, in just 7 months, developed a program that defines a permanent exhibition that is going to be an interactive exhibition. We've published a catalog of the history of the school, focusing on it as a community center, community school. We just launched a walking tour that's available on iTunes and out of the Google Play Store. That is the first history of this area and this school. So you can, you know, and see that history in relationship to larger timelines. We've had numerous conversations here about local history. We host genealogy groups here, so always sort of thinking about the way in which Charlottesville comes together. And so what we're building here, as I said, is both looking at the past, but thinking about that past within our contemporary framework, thinking about the past within the possibilities of adjacencies. What does it mean when one silo sits next to another and all they have to do is cross the hall now and are engaged in a different conversation that is also then informed by a history? Because often, you know, sometimes we see transition without sort of a good sense of history, and it just doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
And I think that is an amazing possibility here in this building that, again, is not happening very many places that we can easily point to.
Well, it's clearly unique. I am going to break for a commercial, and we're going to come back. We're going to talk about how the Jefferson School African American Heritage Center is, as its executive director has just said, a center that pulls together the nation in composite, but certainly Albemarle County, Charlottesville, Virginia. And we want to include a conversation about Vinegar Hill and what happened to it and why, and also perhaps the Salmons Family Cemetery that's in the news now. And we're going to add another guest, Justin A. Serafin, who was formerly of the Monticello, but he's got a new position, and we'll talk to him about that when he returns or when we return. Stay with us. We'll be right back talking about history, past, present, and future.
There's a thin line between brothers and brothels. Black boys reloading magazine clips and white girls uploading clips and posing in magazines. Black on black crime is girl on girl action. Two girls in a bed, one a threesome, a father in between them. Guys want a gangbang with a father in the middle for group sex. Boys play with guns, hustle ecstasy to make it into a penthouse. Playboy girls sell ecstasy to make it into a penthouse. And Hustler, they both want to be seen, so they pose. New pictures fully uncovered, so you're not looking at a face. Gang signs thrown covered, so you're never looking at their faces. Everybody poses. Hey, look, Dad, what do you think of your son now? Did you see my mug shot? Hey, Dad, what do you think of your daughter now? Did you see my money shot? I made you proud. Now my face is all over the TV. I hope I made you proud. Now my whole body is all over the TV. Now I'm the most wanted by you. I just want it to be wanted the most. Surrounded by your arms. I'm surrounded by many men who bruise my body. I'm surrounded by many men who use my body. There's a thin line between brothers and brothels, between brutal and beautiful. Sex and violence share the same root. The common factor in both is men. One's absence is an open door for another's presence. Mug shots and money shots are just family photos where the dad is not in the picture.
Welcome back, and we thank our tech poet, artist at large, Bernard Hankins, for our spoken word commercials. Justin, have you joined Andrea Douglas and me?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, excellent. Everyone, this is Justin A. Serafin, who is currently the Director of Preservation Initiatives and Engagement of Preservation Virginia. How appropriate is that? And Dr. Douglas, you're still with us, yes?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, excellent. I want to, as you were doing, Andrea, I want to now reach out beyond the building itself, which is, as you have listed, these a tremendous list of tenants who are fulfilling the dream of a truly city center. But let's talk now about, again, past, present, and future of Albemarle County, Charlottesville, Vinegar Hill, working our way, Vinegar Hill, Charlottesville, Albemarle County, if we could. Not everybody, as Internet, of course, is worldwide, not everybody even knows what Vinegar Hill is, and we just lost the Vinegar Hill movie theater, but there's a lot more that's been lost in the past in Vinegar Hill. Can you, either one of you or both of you, tell us a bit about that?
Sure. Well, here at the Jefferson School, we're basically at the western edge of what was Vinegar Hill, a neighborhood or an area between Charlottesville downtown proper, and the neighborhood to our west is Star Hill, and further beyond that, you eventually get to the University of Virginia. And the history of Vinegar Hill is unfortunately one of just classic urban renewal, however sort of misguided we would view it today. But the neighborhood was essentially leveled in the in the name of quote unquote progress. It's interesting in that the Jefferson School has stood here since 1926, and that Vinegar Hill area, while home to a few commercial-type businesses today, is still a relatively open plot of land that was never really fully developed, I think, the way that city officials had intended back when the residences and very thriving businesses in that African American community were still functioning, but when they were demolished, it's so that the
okay.
Jefferson's,
excuse me for interrupting, Dustin. Excuse me for interrupting. I just want to be certain I'm clear. The government leveled the neighborhood in Vinegar Hill to build something better, but then they didn't even do that. They just leveled the neighborhood, and nothing came of that. I mean, it's bad enough to have done it, but they didn't.
Well, what happened was once they took down the neighborhood, the area basically was left undeveloped for a number of years. You know, the between the early 1960s and well into the 1970s, this was just this open plot of land between Preston Avenue, what's now Preston Avenue, and Main Street. And it sort of sat in that way for a number of years until one or two new businesses came in there. I remember when I first moved to Charlottesville, there was the IGA store that was there for a little bit. But primarily, as Justin was saying, just kind of an empty land. And when you look at the site maps prior to that, prior to urban renewal, this was a fairly densely populated area of Charlottesville across a range of economic positions. It was, you know, it was not just a slum. It was not just where more wealthier people lived, and it was not just an economic business area. It was really kind of a dense community of all people living in different walks of life. And so, which once the urban renewal project occurred, many of those who were living in the area were then moved into public housing. They were moved over into West Haven. They were moved over into Friendship Court, what's now known as Friendship Court. And so really changing quite the complexion of a community when that happened. So certainly urban renewal was happening in many places across the country, and we recognize that. But we also want to talk about home and what happened here at home. And I think that when we're thinking about the thing that survived that, there is First Baptist Church that survived it. Ebenezer survived it. J.F. Bell survived it. The Jefferson School survived it. Inge's store survived it. But by and large, there were 29 businesses and over 100 homes that were lost as a consequence of it.
So Justin, what ultimately do you think got the neighborhood restarted, since it was sort of leveled and left? I don't want to say
well,
it, die, but
I mean, to turn it back here to the school itself, it's a two-part thing. It's surviving bricks and mortar that have been restored and adapted, and it's the recreation of this of place. It's the, you know, in the absence of other structures, in the absence of what was formerly a vibrant neighborhood, this place stands in for that community activity, and the fact that it's filled with all of these various tenants, whether it's educational, recreational, arts, food, all of these things, it very much pulls back the kind of center, the sort of placemaking here to what, you know, what is the western edge of the former Vinegar Hill.
You know, I get the feeling, I'm not trying to be overly dramatic, but I get the feeling that at some point, some group of people, I'm sure you, Dr. Douglas and Justin, are part of that group at some point. At some point, people looked at what was happening to the neighborhood and said, thinking of the Jefferson School, this far and no further. And here we're going to start rebuilding, and the stand was taken. Is that putting it a little too dramatically, or was it sort
no,
of
No, it's exactly what happened. It's exactly what happened. In 2000, the school board held the Jefferson School in 2000, and they realized that they were faced with a school that needed a lot of care, but they were also faced with other schools that needed considerable amount of renovation and care as well. And they realized they weren't really able to afford it. And so they took about a year of conversation, a little bit over a year, and ultimately the building was deeded back to the city. The city then did an analysis of what should be done with the property. And they did a study, a Tortigallo study. And the recommendation from that study was that it should be turned into commercial use, that it should be, you know, condos or something like that. And it was the community, the Star Hill community, first initiated the conversation about it being in such poor shape and that it was the last remnant of the area. The alumni came together, and then all of the parents whose children between 1994 and 2000, and some of them whose children had gone to the school in 1966 when it was integrated. All of those people came together in a room in the library, in the downtown library, and had a meeting. And from the descriptions of that meeting, you know, one woman, Nancy O'Brien, told me that this was the biggest pep rally for Jefferson that you could have ever experienced. And they sat around in that circle and they talked about what that school meant to them. And out of that came the Citizens for Jefferson group. And the Citizens for Jefferson group lobbied the city council. And the city council in 2005 created the Jefferson School Task Force. The task force made its recommendations, and that is how we began the project as it looks now. They then created a partnership, a Jefferson School partnership in 2007, tasked with developing the building, meaning managing the renovation process, populating the building with tenants, and then financing the project using tax credits. 2011, they created the Jefferson School Foundation. And what's wonderful about this and the creation of the foundation is that the project in and of itself and the way it's financed, it's a collaboration between private and public money. So the city put up one-third of the cost, a private foundation put up one-third of the cost, and the last third of the cost is the foundation's responsibility to raise through fundraising. The success of that fundraising means that each one of these tenants will remain in this building at a rental cost below market rate, which means that more of their dollars can go to delivering programs than to paying rent, which should significantly, again, impact the lives of all of the people who certainly live in this neighborhood. I mean, from what I see, I wish I lived in this neighborhood. I could walk over and do all of those things I just talked about.
Yeah.
But also, you know, as you're watching Main Street change, as you're watching, you know, construction going on down by the university, soon we'll have a hotel on the corner of Ridge and Main. Later in the middle of the year, they'll begin a major construction of student housing almost in, you know, equidistant of that. in the midst of a historic corridor. And that's the other thing that's important. You know, we talk about Vinegar Hill as a historic site, but it's also for the African American community, but it's also a historic site for the Irish community. It's a historic site for a Jewish community. It's a historic site for the university. So in this region alone, I always say, just in a couple of blocks, we tell the history of Reconstruction to massive resistance, or extend it to the university. This is, you know, the colonial, this is American history just down Main Street. And so what we're doing here at the Jefferson School really allows multiple places of entry in a way that is driven by some very innovative thinking. How do you fund an $18 million project? It would have been cheaper to tear this building down. But what it shows is that this community values its historic properties and values this notion of placemaking. And we know that most people don't come to Charlottesville necessarily for the big job. They stay here because they like where they live.
Yeah.
If there's ever been a better historic preservation advocate than Andrea, I don't think nothing. But it's interesting to note what became of this place versus what it might have become. And, you know, it certainly lay dormant for years, and certainly had it been turned into condominiums or apartments, that's certainly preferable to having it have been torn down. But the fact is that with this really, really unique and successful preservation project, this school was once again made publicly accessible. You know, it's been returned to its use, its function here in the community historically, and for the future. And it's that piece of it that makes this project so unique. From a historic preservation point of view, where to begin? This project is such a model for a local community, multiple groups, really demonstrating the value, the worth of a historic resource in their community, rallying around it, and taking that initiative to move forward, and ultimately, you know, for that to result in a project like this, it's pretty much unparalleled. I don't know of another project like it. So from that point of view, from purely the economic and the historic preservation, just the restoration point of view, making it happen is really a fantastical story. To sort of get back more to the history piece, Andrea alluded to some of the more recent discoveries that have been made here in the area in terms of Charlottesville and Albemarle history and African American history here. And really, the Jefferson School, as Andrea mentioned, it really is the kind of touchstone for basically whatever period of Charlottesville history you want to look at. You can somehow, you know, bring it back to this place. It's kind of like the, you know, the Kevin Bacon of of Charlottesville Albemarle history here. Connections are many. Just to kind of broaden out a little bit, talk about Albemarle, as far as some of the programs that have gone on here at the Jefferson School, back in the spring, Preservation Piedmont, local historic preservation group, was hosted here basically all week. All of our events took place here at the school. The theme was very much in keeping with what the Jefferson School African American Heritage Center aims to talk about. And with that, we dealt with, you alluded to it earlier, Marcello, and that's the Jesse Scott Salmon's farmstead site in Albemarle that's in the path of the proposed Western bypass. And it's the sort of incredible amount of research and just new knowledge that has come out of that process in the last 6 to 8 months, and its link to Charlottesville, of course, the Jefferson School, linked back to Monticello. I mean, it just the links go in all different directions. It's that type of material Andrea was talking about that, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's sort of trying to get a better handle on and make the story told here at the African American Heritage Center that much more comprehensive.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's exactly right. When we think about, you ask the question, where does the African American community in Charlottesville come from?
Mm.
How does it form how does it form at Vinegar Hill? What are the stories that lead to the ability to purchase land, to purchase your home, to open a business, so that we can then talk about Vinegar Hill as an African American economic center? Well, much of that story is tied to what's going on out in Albemarle County. Many of those people, like Jesse Scott Sammons, like Berkeley Bullock, that's part of our story as well, they're developing their industry out in the county, and they're servicing the urban community. And they're marrying, and they're creating families and lives and communities that then we go on to significant developments here. So that when we talk about, the idea of property ownership, for instance, and you ask yourself, how does someone come out of slavery and then have the ability to own property? The questions and the answers that we're seeking in the urban center really are found out at that Sammons property.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the answers.
Yeah. Out in the hydraulic mills, Union Ridge area, where post-emancipation, these people are purchasing land, running milling operations, and it's an astounding story. The major discussion right now involves the Sammons farmstead, which is the cemetery site and a home site. There's a structure there. And of course, it was we at Preservation Virginia listed it this year on our most endangered sites list to kind of draw more attention to it, raise more awareness of it as an important resource. And the discussion that's going on right now is really about the eligibility of that site for the National Register, and it gets sort of technical, but basically it's with the research that's come out about the rest of the area, and certainly Jesse Scott Sammons and his family's very prominent kind of connections to those, it's a matter of demonstrating the value and importance of this piece of Charlottesville's history that is sort of in question right now, as the keeper of the National Register makes an ultimate determination of whether or not the Sammon site has the quote unquote integrity to be added to the register, and then that depending that outcome. And then the discussion sort of shifts to doing more archaeology and learning more about the whole site, the whole path of the proposed bypass, in advance of just going in and building the road. So we're sort of in a holding pattern, kind of still waiting to see the some of the final decisions. But many groups have been advocating for the historic resources there.
Yes, and the keeper of the National Registry was in Charlottesville yesterday, I believe, investigating the site, trying and
that's right. That's right. The keeper and the team were here yesterday to look at the site in person. That was following up a meeting that was held July 1 with various consulting parties here, more locally, like Preservation Piedmont, Preservation Virginia, Southern Environmental Law Center, and many others. There was a meeting with VDOT and the Federal Highway Administration, the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation, and they are the body that reports to the keeper. And so it was, and also Salmon's family descendants were at that meeting as well. So they're represented in this process too. But that was a very good forum for kind of getting all the issues out on the table. And yes, you're right, the keeper was here yesterday, so we sort of anxiously await more news.
Wow. Listen, in the short time, thank you both, in the short time we have left, I want to make certain just a couple of things. Let's mention the architect company that did the renovation and restoration at Jefferson School. And again, and let's, Andrea, if you could do that, and then I have a couple more quickies.
Sure. It's Bushman Dreyfus Architects.
Yes.
And they're a local firm here.
Yes. And then secondly, are you planning to have more tenants than the current 9? And if so, how does one go about that? And
well,
that maybe
actually,
ties in.
We're full to the brim. All of us are here on 5-year leases, and there's no more room at the inn, unfortunately.
Okay.
But
that's good.
That's success. That's what it looks like, huh?
Exactly. And my last point, because we only have a couple of more minutes, but I want everyone to know how to get a hold of each of you. Justin, yours is pretty straightforward. Why don't you give us a website or something so people can visit Preservation Virginia, and then we'll get the same from Dr. Douglas.
Sure. Probably the easiest way is to go to our website, which is it's simply Preservation Virginia, all spelled out, preservationvirginia.org, and there you can look at the various programs we're engaged in, our endangered sites. Our annual conference is coming up in October. Please look at that. And if this discussion was interesting to you, do look at that conference program and join us in Roanoke in October. We'll be talking about a lot of the same things.
Fantastic. And Dr. Andrea Douglas, I'm loving calling you. I always call you Andrea. But you have an October event involving at the Jefferson Center School as well, yes? Something involving our own.
We're actually working on a 3-day hip-hop film series, and I think Bernard is going to be working with us on that. We're showing it. I'm calling it global hip hop. So we're looking at hip hop from a global perspective through film. There's a couple of films about hip hop in Turkey and one in, Ghana, on how hip hop has transformed to a new movement there called Hip Life. We've got the producer of a film about the Sugar Hill Gang called I Want My Name Back. He's coming down. We're showing that film. And then we're going to talk about the local hip-hop scene, what it looks like. Does it even exist? And who are the players in that? So the dates on that are October 8th, 9th, and 10th is when we're doing that. So I'm looking forward to that.
Excellent. And give us your Jefferson School website just in case people need it.
Yeah, and you know, we're working on a bunch of things. So to find out what we're doing, the website is jeffschoolheritagecenter.org. Sounds long, but once you remember it, you don't forget it. And you can sign up at the website so that you can receive our email, so that you're always kept informed of the events that are happening here, because we add things on, weekly. So, yeah, jeffschoolheritagecenter.org.
Excellent. Well, thank you both so very much. The show has been grand today. My thanks to all our guests, Mike Silverman, videographer, Dr. Andrea Douglas, Jefferson School African American Heritage Center Executive Director, and Justin A. Serafin, who is the Director of Preservation Initiatives and Engagement at Preservation Virginia. In the studio with me today is spoken word poet and technical support, Mr. Bernard Hankins, who will be appearing in the hip-hop in October at the Jefferson School, and we both thank you for joining us today. This has been the Reasonable Voices Blog Talk Radio, and I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, hoping you will recommend us to your friends. Wishing you all the best, we thank you and look forward to talking with you next time on the Reasonable Voices.
Hey, yo, I got something to say. I need y'all to listen, which is what doesn't happen for most politicians. Yo, I spit thorough raps. Yo, where's my burrow at? I'm fed up with the federal government bureaucrats. Yo, don't need no stethoscope to hear they talking muddles. This is progress. The Frederick Douglass freedom struggle. So they stack their next million. I need some neck healing. I speak truth, raise the roof while they raise the debt ceiling.
Whoa.